Honorable Mazzone. Honorable Dlamini. Nopanda. Honorable Swart. Honorable Mare. Honorable Luyenge. We start with Mganga Cabashe. And then Honorable Teddy. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the submission made by Dr. Ngubane. And in that vein, Chairperson, I think it's a typing error on the submission document, the first page that says Chairperson Ms. Lungi Mgunga, it's Mganga. If it can be corrected, because these are the legal document. It's M-N-G-A. Delete U and insert A. Mganga. Not Mgunga. Mganga, yes. Mangange. Thank you. Don't be as a Mangange. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Can I just caution members that each member will be given 15 minutes to interact, ask question and the response from Dr. Ngubane. Thank you.
Through you, Chairperson, Dr. Ngubane, reading from the minutes and resolutions of the board committees that you have provided as an attachment. There is one annexure, one page 137, of which is talks about the meeting of what transpired at the meeting of the board people and governance committee, where Mr. Minar was presenting and taking that subcommittee on board on the appointment, the nature of the Mr. Molefe's appointment and the discussion of the pension, as it were. My contribution would be, my interaction would be, some of it would be comments, some of it would be questions. To me, I'll repeat what I said to Mr. Minar when he came before the committee. Mr. Minar started to mislead the board in that subcommittee of the board that I've referred to. Because he says something that says the second paragraph, 7.5, Mr. Minar noted that fixed-term contract of 5 years at this level was a first for ESCOM and was also not aligned with best practice. That statement alone is a misleading. The part that is not aligned with best practice. Metros. As early as I've come across personally, a fixed five-year contract practice in the metros of our country in 2004, as early as Feb, on an advertisement of a position. And some of the position, and one of those position was a deputy head position of a department. But I'm not sure the inception date of the 5 year contract. But I've come across that Metro was practicing a 5 year contract in 2004, in Feb.
Now that means for the past 13 years, it has been practiced in this country. And the metros are a sphere of another sphere of government, of which entities, state entities, are part of the other sphere of government, which is national government, there is provincial government, there are local government. And there is always a beginning. Even when the metro started the five-year contract, it doesn't mean that those positions of the deputy head in their departments or deputy directors were not full-time. But a decision was taken, whether at the SALGA level or at the Ministry of Local Government, provincial and local government at the time, but a decision was taken and someone there, the CEOs or the city managers of the metros had to implement that decision, regardless what has happened previously. So my point is that Mr. Minar should have seek clarity from the DG of Public Enterprises to get a clarity for the DG to unpack if the ESCOM, I usually refer it to human resources and legal, did not understand the what is entailed on the 5-year fixed term contract. But he decided to mislead the subcommittee, and then the subcommittee take that report to the board. By extension, he misled the board itself. And I'm saying, I said to him, that was done deliberately by officials, because we know how officials operate. Because he went on and on motivating why this is, can't be practical. And he totally disregarded the instruction by the minister based on the decision, the resolution of the cabinet. Because the minister, the then minister, and any minister cannot change the cabinet resolution. For the minister, the cabinet takes a resolution and the minister must implement. And Minister Lynn Brown would have not had powers to change the decision. And on her letter, she did state that herself and the decision of the cabinet that the CEO must be employed at a five-year contract. Fixed five-year contract. And it's unfortunate that the board allowed him to mislead them, because even the chairperson at the time, whether it was an interim chairperson yourself or you were permanent at the time, and the board itself, none of the board members thought of asking the clarity from the minister. Because the official can ask the clarity from the DG, and then the board can seek for clarity from the minister, and none happened. Because it doesn't matter that other CEOs before that time, before the resolution of the cabinet, were permanent at the ESCOM. The issue here is that the cabinet has taken a decision, which is a resolution, that from now on the CEOs will be employed as five-year contracts, and the DGs. It wasn't about CEOs only, the DGs as well, a five-year contract. And it doesn't prevent yourself with a fixed contract to apply for an extension if you have to, you want to keep that person for another 3 years or another five-year contract, you apply for that. But the mere fact to totally disregard the decision of a cabinet, we have a serious problem with that. And if that did not happen, we wouldn't be here. And over and above that is that they would have, if that was unpacked for them, if they did not have a clarity, they would have learned that a fixed five-year contract, you don't qualify for a pension fund subsidized by the company or by the department. In your case, by the company. The five-year contract, you are given a package, and I heard you to say that it's both market, your company is both market and the state. You would have been benchmark on the market as we have said, and then also benchmark with the other spheres of government that have started practicing five-year contracts, and you arrive at a particular ceiling. And I think the minister would have applied her mind and accepted that or advised if in between particular packages you take the middle one. And human resource people, they know those things. And for me, you were misled, because people in their back of mind, the officials, were thinking of themselves that maybe starting with the CEO, and then it will come to us as other top management, group management. We're not going to be affected. We don't want to be affected. If we apply for the CEO position or CFO position, we don't want this rule to apply by the ESCOM. And I'm saying it was deliberately done. And it's so unfortunate that Dr. Ngubane, with all your experiences, you have, I was looking, you have massive experience of being in the executive, including your premier, and then being the chair of different boards. And your experience, and together that experience, your name is being really, really dragged down by an official. For me, I told him, seated across me, that he did that deliberately, and he misled the board, the subcommittee of the board, and by extension, the board itself. And with that chair, I have to rush to a meeting of chairpersons called by house chair. That will be all from my side.
Thank you very much. I am not sure, Dr. Ngubane, if you want to respond to the concerns or the comments made by Honorable Mganga Gcabashe.
Yeah, Honorable Mganga, I take your point. However, the five-year provision hinged on whether his contract is extended, in which case it becomes a normal pensionable situation, or if it's not extended, to keep him at ESCOM, we needed to make this provision. But I take your point.
Honorable Sedi.
Dr. Ngua. Afternoon. I want us to see what appears to be a contradiction. While you were responding to Advocate Vanara earlier, you said when you agreed to the early retirement of Mr. Molisi was on the basis that you'll only be paid what is due to him as per the age. But the resolution talks about the waiving of the penalties. Is that not a contradiction? Which is going, that waiving, which is going to be at the cost of the company, is that not a contradiction?
Well, advice to us was that other senior executives had ESCOM pay the penalty when they took early retirement. That was the point of departure. But in our case, it was only to be applicable after 5 years' service, not just immediately without that service. So it was, I presume we could have unpacked this even more, but that was the assumption.
I'll appreciate if you can just be brief so that we are able to, in the interest of time. The conduct judgment that Advocate Vanara just read now, which we all agree is a true reflection of what transpired. If it's found to be correct, will you be right to say you lied under oath about Mr. Mulite's presence in the PNG meeting that we spoke about earlier?
I would like to see the minutes of that, because I didn't attend all PNG meetings.
No, I agree. I'm saying, in the light of you still going to verify, if it's found to be correct, will it be right to say you lied under oath that you were not there when the matter was discussed in the committee?
Can we please accept the fact that to lie is a deliberate act? Here I'm saying, I'm quoting practice at ESCOM, that when we discuss prescribed officers' benefits and salaries, they are asked to recuse themselves. Now, this is why I'm saying, if we can get that minute to prove that I was at that meeting, then it will be a different matter.
Fine. Let's go back to the whistleblower document, which you said you did not bring along. Will you agree with me that that should have been one of the very important documents that you should have brought along?
Unfortunately, I don't have, at the end of the meeting, I think the company secretary must have those documents. I searched for it, I couldn't find it.
But you agree it's one of the very important documents?
No, absolutely.
Okay. The author of that document, have you ever shared the identity of the author with any other person?
I did not know the author of the document. It was undated, it was not signed. But now that Mr. Masango says he wrote it, well, now I know who the author was.
Mr. Masango said when he appeared before the committee that he had a one-to-one session with you and you advised him to write a document about all these issues. And I think that's the document that...
I differ there. The only issue that we talked about was this being sent to Harvard. He was violently against that, and he was asking me to intervene. There was no letter of grievance. I mean, if he had given me a document, that would have amounted to a letter of grievance against Mr. Koko. There was no such letter.
How would you describe your relationship with Salim?
Salim?
Kiza.
Okay.
Salim Isa.
Okay. Salim, I came to know around 2013. It was about oil business in West Africa. It's a long story. I was sitting at JP's with some people who were involved in West Africa, in Mali, delivering diesel there. And Salim came to me, and introduced himself. And then I introduced him to the people I was with. He knew that we were talking about oil business. He said he's also got an oil company, Inca Oil. He wanted to be part of my company, which was Gate Oil and Gas, to go, and he was going to arrange the trip to Car to go for oil blocks there. So it was a business relationship.
Oh, so he ended up being part of that company.
He ended up being part of that company, but because of the violence in Car, we cancelled the whole project, and that's when he resigned from this company.
Have you ever declared to the company since you joined ESCO? Have you ever declared your interest in relation to that kind of a relationship on the basis that you have worked with Salim before?
No.
Okay.
No, I declared Gate Holdings. Under Gate Holdings was Gate Oil and Gas. That company became dysfunctional. It did not continue to trade or do anything. So it was an oversight on me. When I declared Gate Holdings, I should have also added Gate Oil. But it was, I mean, this was now 2014. You know, it was something that had not functioned. It was a mistake on my part, but I mean, I just forgot about it.
Let's deal quickly with your role in the 1.8 prepayment certificate. What role did you play?
The company secretary requested an urgent meeting. But because people were in different places, we agreed on a round-robin discussion. But it had first to go through IFC. IFC held its own round-robin. They approved the emergency payment in order to secure coal supplies. It was a proposal that came from management. Because IFC said it made sense, the board agreed on the round-robin, and it was approved on the round-robin.
Do you think there's anything wrong with this 1.8 prepayment ticket?
Well, let's go back to the situation then. The situation was horrible. Everybody knows in South Africa. We were in danger of a national blackout.
That's fact. So in essence, to be direct, there's nothing wrong.
Well, at the time, we could see nothing wrong because of agents.
The extension of the T-Systems contract that you spoke about in your presentation here, that extension is now proposed while the procurement process has already started. Why this motivation now when the procurement process has already started? The move when there is a procurement process that has already started?
Well, that's a very long story. I think this whole issue has been going on even before 2014. The issue of replacing the IT supply. I came in 2014 about Christmas. Chairman then, Mr. Tsotsi, asked me to chair the tender board committee.
My apologies, doctor.
Let me just explain.
Yeah, but I'm saying I would appreciate if you can just, I don't want to be in trouble with the chat.
Okay.
Just to be brief, my interest is why motivate for an extension of a contract in the middle of a process of procurement?
But that happens all the time at ESCO. Many, many contracts, call for tenders, are cancelled, are modified, are reissued. It wasn't anything new. And ESCOs, which is the ESCO Procurement Subcommittee, recommended that because of lack of capacity in IT, this contract must be cancelled.
You spoke about a certain Mr. Sal Lahiro, something like that. Who was accused of floating procurement processes. But the very same Salim is now paid settlement amount. Why that kind of a situation?
Well, with apology, this happened before my time.
That one happened before. Oh, I'm raising it because it was part of your submission.
Yes, I would like to comment on that.
There is Sakela Taviso. Yeah, Sakela Taviso. I think you spoke about that appointment, which was appointed to undertake sensitivity analysis from your presentation. What exactly were these people expected to do?
As I've stated in my notes, I was not part of those processes, but it's what I elicited when I inquired about what happened with Dongfeng, that actually consultations with lawyers, consultations with audit firms took place, and they came to the conclusion that Dongfeng was the right company to appoint. I just brought that in as a document which I've elicited on preparing for this meeting. So it was part of the procurement process. Every procurement process goes with auditing and analysis. So that audit company was part of that process.
I'm sure by now you have heard about a meeting that is set to have taken place in Durban, attended by Mr. Tsotsi. a meeting that took place in Durban that's said to have been attended by Mr. Tsotsi and Dudumye. Have you heard about that meeting before?
Well, that's what Mr. Tsotsi told us.
What did he say?
Well, he said he was instructed to suspend certain officials and so on. That's what we were discussing on our first meeting. And then we even called for the minister to come in because we did not believe that story. But ultimately we decided to appoint Dentons to carry out a forensic fact-finding inquiry.
And then the outcome of inquiry?
Well, it came with a lot of recommendations.
Yeah, you can just share with the committee.
Well, the inquiry looked at the poor performance of our coal fleet, which was causing the load shedding. It inquired about the delay in the new build program, which was characterized by billions of penalties and claims, and questioning the ability to handle contract at Eskom. It looked at the financial challenges of Eskom, the fact that, in fact, NERSA had cut down on the tariff, how was the financial gap to be, you know, covered in terms of revenues that were going to be very low. It looked at security at Eskom as a key national point. It looked at the integrity of the procurement process, how it complies with the rules. They gave us a big report on that. And then we handed it over to Audit and Risk. Audit and Risk came up through Mr. Molefi Nkabu, who is the head of internal audit and forensics and assurance. He gave each division of ESCOM issues that had to be corrected. By the time I left, I think about 61, no, probably about 18 of those issues had actually been implemented and corrected.
The last one. To your knowledge, Dr. Ngubane, what work has been undertaken by regiments and or trillion? What work has been undertaken by regiments and or trillion with regard to the Duba boiler threat? That you spoke, I think we spoke about the Duba boiler issue, the insurance claim segment and project. Specifically, what did they do?
They said I was not really part of that process. But what I received did not mention trillion or regiments. It just talks about the process, which is before court at the moment. The Marion Roberts, what was the other company? Anyway, they took the matter to court on an interdict. The interdict was granted, but the review of that tender is still before court, has not yet been settled. So that is the information I have.
Thank you very much, Honorable Said.
Just a second. No,
Honorable Said, your time is up. I said I gave you 15 minutes, remember?
Yeah, just a second, my apologies. Yeah, I understand you might not have been part of this one. Any other
can
work?
Can you
that
ask
you
for a second?
Yes.
Ask for a second.
Yes.
Second.
Any other
ask
work that
for
you
a second,
think?
Mr. Said.
Oh, I'm asking for 30 seconds.
Thank you.
The any other work that you think that has been conducted by Trillion while you were part of the board?
Well, the trouble at Esco. Appointments of consultants are really a managerial function. They don't come to us to ask, we want to appoint company so-and-so. They decide. I mean, PwC, appointment by management. Deloitte, appointment by management. I mean, we don't actually see those, because what comes to the BTC is anything above 750 million. But anything below that is dealt by management.
Thank you.
Honorable Mazon. Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Ngubane, I have it on record that Andy McCauley was the CEO of Gade Oil and Gas. Iqbal Shwama was the director and Salim Issa was the director. Can you tell me if in this company of yours any Gupta brothers were involved or any children of any Gupta were involved?
Long before I came to ESCOM, I was the owner of the company. I was the director, and Salim became the director because he was going to arrange for our prospecting, for our exploration, and so on, in the car. That was all, two people.
So at no stage did you know that, or were you aware of any Gupta involvement through Salim Issa in that company?
No.
Dr. Ngubane, your wife is Sheila Ngubane,
and
together you own Huntrex 305, which owns Zululand Quarries, Natal Sands, and Hannes Investments. Now, it's been reported that 50 million rand was borrowed from the SOE Inhlalo Development Finance Corporation. Has that money, in fact, been paid back?
Chairperson, with due apologies, this matter is before court. It has nothing to do with ESCOM or my role at ESCOM. It happened in end of 2011, so I will not discuss that issue.
Chairperson, that's fine. Previous Minister of Minerals, Minister Ramahlodi, has very openly accused you, as well as Mr. Molefe, of trying to strong-arm him into withdrawing the Glencore mining licenses. Can you please explain the situation between the three of you?
Honourable Mazoni, Minister Ramahlodi suspended Glencore mining license. Glencore was supplying Hendrina, supplying Komati, supplying Arnott power stations. He suspended them because they did not do retrenchments in the way that it was supposed to be done. We appealed to him not to do that because he was going to cause massive load shedding. That was what we discussed with him. Where it comes from that we're forcing him to... In fact, how could we do that? We're in the midst of severe load shedding. How could we say, Minister, take away Glencore? Glencore has got 14 assets in coal mining. Supplies a lot of stations in the Witbank coal basin. How could we say put the lights out? Because that would have amounted to putting the lights out. I cannot understand how the minister came up with this idea because it's not logical. We could not ask him to throw this country into a national blackout. So I can't say he's lying, but I think it's miscommunication.
Dr. Ngubane, did you know of any meetings that took place in Switzerland with Minister of Mineral Resources, Minister Zwane, and any coal practitioners or coal mine executives?
No. In fact, I hardly ever get involved in that type of work. It's managerial, and if there's a decision to be made, it goes to BTC. So I had no knowledge. No, I read it in the newspapers.
Mr. Korma came here to our committee. In fact, he was one of the first people that testified. And during his testimony, he discussed with us your almost overprotective nature surrounding Mr. Molefe. In actual fact, he testified that on the day that Mr. Molefe was dismissed, you requested him and Suzanne Daniels to accompany you to go and give moral support to Mr. Molefe. Is this in fact true?
The only time I met Mr. Molefe after he had left ESCOM was after the meeting with the minister, where the minister said, this 30 million thing is untenable, let's go back and change it, either Molefe must resign or he must agree to a lower payment. That is when, and Koma was not there, it was Suzanne, it was Veneta, it was myself who were dealing with those issues. There is no time when Koma accompanied me to see Molefe.
So there's a, Chairperson, just for the record, there's a disparity in the testimony there. On March the 2nd, that meeting on March the 2nd, it was in fact testimony of Ms. Daniels that you convened that meeting and that a unanimous decision was taken to suspend Mr. Koko. And there is a recording to that extent. Do you deny that there was a unanimous decision taken at the meeting on the 2nd of March to suspend Mr. Koko?
I've answered that from the advocate. That we agreed on that, but it was simply the modalities of dealing with the issue that became the question. We had agreed on that.
Now, Mr. Comer went further on to say that you personally told him that Minister Brown had phoned you and told you that that suspension had to be lifted. Why would he come to this committee and lie?
No, I don't know. To me, Mr. Comer said Mr. Khoza told him that at a party at Mr. Khoza's house, he had phoned the Guptas to ask the minister to instruct me. That's what, and I asked Khoza about this, and he denied it. He said there was no such thing. So I never, the issue of minister talking to me came from Mr. Comer saying that that's what Mr. Khoza had told him. So I don't know why he's doing that.
Let's discuss a little bit about this resignation, retirement, retrenchment of Mr. Malefi, because, you know, this is still remains one of the greatest embarrassments in our country's record to date. Suzanne Daniels testified that she had marked up the offer of employment following a letter sent to Mr. Anton Minal by DPE. It was clear from the inception that this was going to be a fixed-term contract. Why was this ever even brought into question? Because we've seen the original contract, and it clearly stated it was a fixed-term contract.
That was a later contract, after we had concluded on a permanent contract. So all these movements were trying to deal with that situation of initially permanent employment, subsequently going to a fixed-term contract.
Now, you see, Dr. Ngabani, I find this extremely disturbing that there are contracts after contracts, before contracts, subcontracts, maybe contracts. I mean, was this the normal goings-on at an entity such as Eskom?
Initially, all we knew was that after the minister had given us authority that Molefe is going to be the group chief executive, that he was on permanent employment. There was no mention of any fixed term of contract. That is why he got registered on the Eskom Pension and Provident Fund, and that is why every month money was deducted for the Eskom Pension Fund. This came later, and then it complicated issues.
Dr. Ngabani, I'm afraid I don't buy that. And I put it to you, in fact, that this pension initiative markup was a scheme that was enacted as a get-rich-quick program, and I'd like your opinion on that.
Well, then you must assume that all of us at Eskom are crooks, are terrible people to think of such things. Why should we want to enrich Brian Molefe? Why should we? The only thing we were trying to deal with was this disgruntlement with a new situation where he had assumed it's permanent, then we tell him he's gone on fixed. In fact, he could have gone. He was very upset about that. So it was a matter of keeping him in, trying to work out a scheme that will be sustainable after 5 years.
Dr. Ngabani, let me ask you this. Why the obsession with keeping Brian Malefi in his position? And I would go so far as to say it's an obsession, given your reaction at the press conference where you shouted at people in the press conference because Mr. Malefi had a bit of a breakdown and had tears and had walked off the stage. And also the fact that there was a near physical incident between you and a reporter. And you screamed at that reporter for having done something to Mr. Malefi. So I want to know why this overprotectiveness and why this need to go out of your way to make sure that there was a pension scheme for Mr. Malefi.
You're making a lot of assumptions. At that time, we were on the cusp of a national blackout. Malefi had brought such joy to us and the country when people's food was not rotting in their refrigerators, when people can have normal lives. There was no one who could have turned Eskom at that stage that I know of in such a short period of time, reduce the expenditure on diesel, which was R1 billion a month, have fast-track the commissioning of Ingula, fast-track the commissioning of the first unit of Medupi, and fast-track the whole build program. It was a fantastic change from the billions that have been flowing out of Eskom through poor leadership. So I was excited by this, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Ngubane, I again have to put it to you that Eskom has gone through remarkable downgrades. They're in a state of complete and utter financial ruin. The board has been forcibly removed and replaced with a new board that's come in and immediately suspended people that were part of that board. I mean, you know, and this isn't my assumption, please understand, because I also, you know, I look at the fact that FEDUSA, you know, a very large union, requested that you yourself and Mr. Brian Malefi face a commission of inquiry. NUM, and I quote, said, the entire board of Eskom is a disgrace to the power utility and the government. So how can we say that such a fantastic job was done when there was downgrade after downgrade and we faced an almost economic crash of this country thanks to Eskom?
When we came in, the problems were already there. They were there. They were big. The minister complained that at one stage, Chairman Sozi, together with Machila, was the acting CEO, actually phoned her while she was having lunch, Christmas lunch, saying we'll not be able to pay salaries end of January. It was on a precipice to disaster. Here comes Malefi. The international agencies, I mean the funders, the people who buy Eskom bonds, go back to buying Eskom bonds. We accumulate enough money, we make an EBITDA of probably R30 billion. First time. I mean, and by the time I left, the finances were shooting up because we were having a buy-in from all the bondholders. I will put it to you that the devastation that came with Malefi's going away was a disaster for Eskom and the people of this country because we were on a trajectory to change the whole situation. Then comes the acting people, then Eskom engineers and senior people start fighting, instability starts going. General Rakau was reporting to the minister, and I was at that meeting, and Suzanne was at that meeting, that people are almost killing each other at the power stations. So I knew you remove good leadership, you are calling for trouble. That's why I made an emotional statement. You said, I think this is dealing a blow, not only on Eskom, but the people of this country.
Right, Chair, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that point because I'm of the opinion that me and many, many millions of South Africans don't think that the leadership at Eskom was in any way the leadership that we as a country deserve. Chair, I see that you're looking at me for time.
Sorry, can I answer to this?
Chair, it wasn't a question, it was a statement.
Okay.
Chairperson, and to Dr. Ngubane, I think you need to take ownership of what happened at Eskom. I think you need to accept that state capture is a very real thing that this committee has proved time and time again existed. State capture has almost ruined our country. Piece by piece, utilities were sold off to the highest bidder at the expense of South Africans. Dr. Ngubane, you were the chairperson of the SABC. It collapsed. You were the chairperson of the Land Bank. It collapsed. You were the chairperson of ESCOM. It has collapsed. I would put it to you, sir, that you're a delinquent board member. And if I were you, I would certainly hang your head in shame and not make excuses for what has happened at ESCOM. No further questions, Chair.
Can I allow
you? Yes, you can. I allow you to respond.
This is a real denigration of my service to this country. As Phakamani, who is now at ESCOM, he was the CEO at Land Bank. We worked together. We recovered the Land Bank. No one was refusing to roll over their bonds. It shot through the sky. SABC, you mentioned, was broke from 2007. Totally broke. We raised money. We got advertisers to come back. When I left, we had paid off Nedbank 2 billion rand loan, which was supported by a government guarantee. Now, I don't know where you picked this. The press may write what they like. I've never been a favorite of anyone, of the press or anyone. But to now come and paint such a picture is ridiculous, because load shedding was stopped under our command. It changed the whole situation. The fact that NERSA reduced the tariff and caused serious revenue gaps in ESCOM is an issue that even this present board will have to deal with. The municipal debt, which is running into billions, is an issue that this present board will have to deal with. The pass-throughs to IPPs, which are in billions of rands, is an issue that this board will have to deal with. Unless they find another methodology, a new model, these problems will continue. They are not just with us.
Thank you, Dr. Ngubane. I will now give over to Honorable Dlamini.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Ngubane, let's go to the 1.8 billion prepayment. In your statement here, you are saying ESCOM was supposed to get 238.9 million rand saving. Did ESCOM get that saving?
Well, I'm not sure about that. It's the finance department that will know. But that's what we were told, that if we continue with the cost plus mine type of purchase, the cost that we spend, the money that we spend on short-term and medium-term contracts, which are very expensive, mind you, will be reduced. And that was the amount it referred to.
So you're saying as a board chairperson, the finance under your good leadership that you claim to have, they come to you and say, we're going to make a prepayment of 1.8 billion and we're going to have a saving of 238 million. And then you don't follow up to check, did that happen or not?
Internal audit certified that the code had been delivered.
Did you read that audit? Did you check that audit that you're talking about now?
No, but I mean, they give a catalyst report from month to month.
But I'm asking you, did you read that audit? Because I don't want to go through this process and then you come back and say, I did not read that audit. Did you read that audit?
Look, if the rationale is that we get cheaper coal compared to short-term and medium supply contracts, and I'm told through the catalyst report that the coal has been delivered, obviously that has been achieved.
Yeah, but that's why I'm asking a simple question. Did you read the report?
I read the report.
Okay.
That's why
okay. Yeah. Right. Now, let's move. On your statement here, you were saying BTC approved a prepayment to take out of 659 million. That is now in April. How much was actually paid so that we can get clarity on this? There's approval and payment. How much was it paid from ESCOM to Tegeta account in April? So this amount, when you're saying it's approved, that's the amount that was paid from ESCOM to Tegeta. Agreed. What was it for?
It was to supply Anode. There had been strikes at Wraith Cave and also other mines that normally supply Anode.
Okay. That was a prepayment to supply Anode. Was that executed in full? The prepayment was done and the coal was supplied in full. And you saw the audit, the report. Was there an audit report? How did you get, who gave you the report to say, on the 585 that we spent, the actual work has been done and completed in full according to the terms?
Absolutely. And proof of that, we survived that winter with sufficient stocks of coal. Had we not, we would have known it because we would have had load shedding.
Okay. Let's remain here on the 659 that was paid and that you are confirming that the work was done in full. Let's talk to the work. You're saying the prepayment, was it for 6 months, 12 months, or 5 months? No, now you need to give me clear answers. Was it 5 months, 6 months, or 12 months? Yeah, check. Okay, 5 months. Right. And then how much was the tonnage that was required for Anode a month on the 5 months? 485,000. That was the tonnage that was required a month. How much was the tonnage? Because Coco came here, he gave us a report, he said the tonnage that was required for that 6 months, 485,000. Are you disputing that?
Not my area of work. It's reports that I get, so I can't remember all the details that is there.
No, but the report was given to you, and you said to me you read the report to show, make sure that the work was done.
Yes.
Clearly. These are key major items on the 585 million. To say we are giving you 585 million for a 5 month contract that you just confirmed, and this is the tonnage every month. That can be difficult.
But surely, if our audit system certifies that the coal was delivered, that's enough for me.
Yeah, but so you got no idea how much coal was delivered.
No,
but did you read the report?
I read the report.
So what did the report say about how many tons were delivered a month?
Tons that are equivalent to the amount of money paid.
No. No. Listen,
in this country can.
But I'm not talking about other chairmen in the country. I'm talking about you. Let's leave other chairmen in the country. I'm talking about you. Now, I'm saying to you, the coal, and let's say the output of Arnott Power Station, the coal that was requested there per month is 485,000, and Coco agree, and Coco confirmed that. Are those figures making sense to you? Because you are the chairman. At least you know what you are dealing with.
Yes, but I read these reports. So I can't carry it in my head all the time. I would need to actually see the report in front of me. What I'm reporting is what was reported.
What was reported?
What I've got in these documents.
Right. Let me tell you now. And I'm going to go back to that assumption that you said, Honorable Mazzoni is assuming that you guys are wrong people, and I'm going to get there. Coco came here and said the coal, it is confirmed by the output of Arnold and Drina and Komati combined, that their production is 485,000 tons a month. And Coco is an operator, he confirmed that. Are we in agreement with that?
Yeah, that's his job.
Okay.
That's his job. He knows
Okay. So you agree with that? Okay, cool. And then the rate, in terms of the negotiations, there was an issue that the rate that we agreed with, and it's on the statement, and no one has disputed that, was at 150 rand a ton. Do you know how much rate that was paid on this agreement with Tegeta? The rate per ton?
First of all, the 150 rands per ton, as far as I know, applied to optimum. Anode uses a higher grade of coal. It cannot be 150 rands per ton.
Now I'm talking on this contract, on the prepayment. How much was the rate per ton then? He has a prepayment contract, 585 million, supply me for 6 months. What was the agreed ton? Let us pay the report that you read. No, the rate per ton.
But I think, Chairperson, I'm being asked operational matters. I'm not an operational chairman. I'm not an executive chairman. I deal with reports that come to the board through the normal channels. So COCO is the operator. They do the negotiations. All I know from where I sit is that the price of coal to ANOT is much higher than 150 rands per ton because they use almost export quality coal, not the rubbish that comes from the washing that is used by many other stations.
You know, Dr. Ngubane, I'm not asking you operational matters. I'm asking you what is on the report that you're saying you read. It's on the report. This information that I'm asking you on the prepayment, it's on the report that was submitted to you, even the closing report of the work that was done. These things are there. There's nothing operational. I'm asking you on the report that you read and that you were satisfied with as a board chairperson. So in general, it did not show you or tell you on the report that how much per ton was paid. Okay, I'm going to tell you how much per ton was paid on those contracts. It was 155 rand per ton. For Arnold, Chandrina, and the Komati. Because those were the three power stations that were supplying under the Optimum.
I mean, you have that information, I don't have it. Not like, as far as I know, ANOT was supplied through seven companies.
But how do you dispute the information? I'm saying to you, this is what happened. And you say, no, it's not correct. Then I'm asking you, then what is the correct version?
I'm not saying it's not correct. I'm saying that's what you have. I don't have that information. All I know was the tonnages that were paid for were received.
And you don't know how much you paid per ton. But as a chairperson, you do a prepayment, and then they say to you, we'll pay, we're going to deliver for a prepayment of 5 months. Because even that 5 months, COCO gave us a different number from what we have. But as a chairperson, then the report comes to you. You don't check how much you spend per ton. So how do you relate to what was agreed? Did you check on what was presented? On saying we are making a prepayment and this is how much you're going to pay per ton and compare it with the closing up report to say actually what was proposed in the initial proposal and what was actually done and paid. Did you check that those rates they agreed to each other?
There are hundreds of contracts.
I'm talking about this one.
No, I'm saying you're asking an unfair question.
No, but no, it's not unfair. It's one foreign contract that I'm talking about.
You want to say I must know in detail all the same...
Yeah, if you don't know, you can tell us that you don't know.
But I told you. I said I read the Catalyst report from internal audit, which said these things were delivered.
No, it doesn't look like you know what happened. But let me tell you, that contract, it was... On the proposal, it was 150 per ton. And when we do those numbers, the money that was paid to the Guptas, it's about 372 million. The amount of the coal that was done, when you take the number of tons times the 150 that was agreed on by five months, but you paid the Guptas 659 million. Those are the facts on the report that you should have read. But we'll deal with it at a different platform. Your understanding of the fixed term contract. What is your understanding of the fixed term contract when it pertains to Brian Molefe?
It means you're a contracted worker. You do not get pension rights. You are medical aid. The package you spend on your car and other items is lumped up in your salary. It becomes much higher than a permanent employee who has got pension and so on. because it's concentrated in the 5-year period.
And then why was an extra consideration when it in the respect of pension incentives and salary for Brian?
Because he was employed on a permanent contract and he was a contributing member of the Eskom pension fund.
Chairman Tsotsi wanted to suspend the 4 executives. And initially you did not agree with that thinking, is that correct? Or you agreed with it from day one?
No, initially we didn't agree, that's why we had a meeting with the minister.
But eventually you voted in favor of the suspension.
Because there was no other way. We sought the special leave, but it was denied by legal.
Okay, the Guptas, do you know them? Have you ever met any one of them?
Yeah, of course I have.
Which one?
Almost all of them.
Where? Have you been to their house?
Of course I've been there.
During your tenure as the chairperson of ESCOM?
Of course I have been to social events, to their weddings, to the South African of the Year Awards.
No, I'm talking specifically to their house during your tenure of ESCOM. Have you been to their house?
Yes, I have.
And your other board members, is there any day where you pull them along to a good house?
No, I didn't.
Well, you just went alone?
I was invited for special occasions, and I went.
Honorable Jamin, your time is up.
Oh, okay. Can I ask for 30 seconds?
1 second.
Yeah, it's going to be 1 second. What is your take on the Guptas with everything that came out through email leaks, Stena Farms and everything? What is your take about those people, that family? In the context of what is happening in South Africa with state capture, corruption and everything.
Well, I'm waiting for the Commission of Inquiry to happen and then I will know the facts.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Norban.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Nguban, what is the criteria for being in the ESCOM pension dundu?
ESCOM pension
fund, yeah.
ESCOM pension, if you are a permanent employee of ESCOM, you get registered on the pension, you pay your subscriptions, and when you retire, you get paid the pension.
So only when you are a permanent employee and not a fixed-term contract employee.
That's correct.
So what was Mr. Molefexik? Permanent, fixed, half-permanent?
Mr. Molefexik started as a permanent employee, registered on the ESCOM Pension Provident Fund. Later on, that was changed to 5 years. And then the adjustment was made that after 5 years' service, if his contract is not extended, he will be compensated in terms of the resolution.
So when he started as a permanent member, can you give me the date of his permanent employment? Appointed formally 1st of October.
Yeah, as far as I can remember.
And if he was appointed 1st October, then it would mean as a member of the pension fund, he would be a member starting from the 1st of October.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the pension fund board, where's the board chairperson when they were here, according to them, what they had received from ESCOM or from yourself, from where Mr. Molefes was appointed from 1st October 2015, according to you. And the pension fund says Mr. Molefes joined the fund on the 14th of September 2015. And on the exit form, the 25th September 2015 is cited as employment date.
Is cited as? September.
Yes. The pension fund says he joined the fund on the 14th of September.
Well, I need to...
And on his exit form, 25th September 2015 is cited as employment date.
Well,
according to them, he was employed on the 25th of September. According to you, he's employed on the 1st of October.
Well, I'd have to check those things.
According to them, he joined the fund on the 14th of September.
Could you please just take the mic closer to your mouth? The mic. It's the mic. When you speak closer to your... It's close.
Until he was appointed. So I'm not sure how he could have become a member of the pension fund.
It's okay. But we have it on record. They know that he was formally employed from the 25th of September. And where now you know him from the 1st of October. Is the 1st of October 2015 the first contract or the second contract of Mr. Molefe? Remember in 2.5.10, you state that Mr. Molefe signed a second contract of employment. Now would this be, if he's employed on the 1st of October, would this be a second contract or the first contract?
On 10 September 2015, the board resolved that the PNG committee should submit a recommendation to the minister around the appointment of Mr. Molefe as group chief executive.
Chair, page 21, paragraph 2.5.10. Dr. Ngubane said, on 7 March 2016, Mr. Molefe signed a second contract of employment for a fixed term of 5 years with effect from 1 October 2015 and terminating on 30 September 2020.
Yes, but I don't see the contradiction in that. Because already on the first, this is 2015. Where he was employed on a permanent basis. Subsequent to that, the term of appointment is changed, and that's when he signed the second contract.
So in 2016, he was appointed for the second time?
In 20? Yes.
According to this?
That's when he signed the fixed term contract.
Okay. No, it's fine. I think I have what I wanted. Now, from 2.4.16 to 2.4.18, it says all these paragraphs stated to me, they show that there was not a clear final date of employment for Mr. Molefe. If every now and then you change your contract of employment, where you would sign something and give it to the minister would sign and bring it to you, but you are not aware that it's actually not permanent, it's supposed to be fixed, and the minister is not agreeing with permanent, it's going to be fixed. And then the following year, on the 7th of March, there's another contract where now he's a fixed. And according to the pension fund, they know him from 14 September 2015. These days, there are so many discrepancies there. Would you say there was something, if it was not you, if you were just an ordinary South African looking into this, wouldn't you say there was something cooking here, brewing, with all these dates?
Well, as a person who has no access to information, I would certainly say that. But if I have access to information...
Thank you. To know if you, what you would say, not any explanation going forward. On the 23rd of May 2017, at Townhouse Hotel, there was a portfolio committee day meeting where you and Ms. Daniels were part of that committee meeting. The committee inquired about the 30 million given to Mr. Molefe. And in that meeting, none of you mentioned the fact that Mr. Molefe was not a permanent, was now fixed, or was fixed, no longer permanent. And all your explanations were on the fact that he was a permanent, he was part of the pension fund, and you had followed all the requirements in paying him out that money. Do you still believe that?
But, Honorable Chair, I have explained in detail.
Chair, can you ask Mr. Ngubane to answer my question? Does he still believe that with everything that they said on the 23rd of May 2017 and what has been happening and what has been said and what he has stated today, does he still believe that they followed every process that they were supposed to follow in calculating and paying out Mr. Molefe the 30 million?
All these actions that we took, we had legal consultants, we had administrative staff at ESCOM. It was informed by extensive consultation. So that's all I can say.
Do you believe that you have done the correct thing as the board of ESCOM to agree that you come to a 30 million resolution to pay Mr. Molefe?
The 30 million was not calculated by us.
Chair, does he agree that the process they followed as a board were correct?
I do.
Thank you. Hey, the tuna. Now, through you, Chair, Dr. Ngubane, having worked with Ms. Daniels, how would you characterize her?
Ms. Daniels is a very gifted young woman. Very astute at law, but also very astute at company management as a company secretary.
Do you believe she provided credible advice on the reinstatement of Mr. Molefe?
Well, she didn't only provide advice. She went out to senior counsel, to legal counsel, and I believed what she advised.
Okay. Looking back on all of these issues, especially the Brian Molefe issue, do you believe that from his appointment, his stepping down, resignation, retirement, sabbatical leave, whatever happened, and the conclusion of the pension fund up to a point where Mr. Molefe decided to resign and then be a member of parliament and then come back and you reinstate him, do you believe you could have done anything differently?
Well, we did what we did on best advice. If we had advice to the contrary, that's what would have followed.
Dr. Ngubane, with all the advice that we were given, you are now sitting here looking back. Do you think you would have done anything differently?
No, I don't think so, facing those circumstances.
Thank you. Mr. Ngubane, do you believe you were a good chairman, efficient, honest, and all that?
Well, we did a board evaluation as is required by the PFMA company law, and we scored good marks on the being evaluated by external auditors. Board members were asked individually to evaluate. But I'm answering you. Board members were asked by the evaluators.
I request Mr. Ngubane to not explain. Does he believe, as a chairperson, he was a good one? Actually, if you were to ask me, do you believe that Nageli Namhlanje Banda, as an MP here, am I a good MP, honest, blah, blah. If I believe that, I will say yes. I believe I was a good MP. So can Dr. Ngubane just answer if does he believe, given the opportunity of being the chairperson of the board in ESCOM, he was a good chairperson, an honest chairperson?
I was a good, honest chairperson who did his best.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mubanda, now looking at Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Dr. Ngubane. Good to see you again. I'd like to ask you, you quoted from the Public Protector's report, and you indicated that you had taken legal advice not to take it on review. One of the findings of the Public Protector's report, it could be, you could say it's an observation, is that she says on page 329, it appears that the conduct of the ESCOM board was solely to benefit of Togeta in awarding contracts to them, and thus it appears to be inconsistent with the PFMA. The short question is, would you not agree, and I don't know if you've been following this inquiry, but the evidence here and a lot of evidence in the media in general is overwhelming to the effect that the board and the conduct referred to in this Public Protector's report was to the benefit of Togeta in awarding coal contracts to them?
Swart, that's why I look forward to this commission, because the books will be examined and the truth will come out. What has been printed in the media is what people believe, but I'm saying we worked with documentation, which satisfied me that proper processes in procurement were followed. I cannot gainsay what comes out of EXCO, of committees of the board, without evidence.
Dr. Ngubane, I'm sure you also appreciate that a lot of evidence has been tendered before this inquiry as well. And of course, there's also investigations that are taking place. And we know the Asset Forfeiture Unit has already acted in terms of the Trillion McKinsey contract. So we don't have to wait for a commission, whilst I appreciate there'll be further evidence. But there is already now a lot of evidence that indicates state capture of various SOEs and ESCOM. And would you still say that you would rather wait for a commission of inquiry?
I would prefer a situation where people don't just come and say what they believe or want to say. If there was a situation where we sat here and someone said something, the evidence leader cross-examines them, my lawyer cross-examines them, that would be the fair process. Remember, we never had a chance to go and present ourselves to the public protector.
No, I appreciate that, but you also indicated that you decided as a board not to take her observations on review, but there was an input from the executives, Mr. Molefe and Mr. Corker. They made substantial inputs to the public protectors, but I take your point that the board itself did not make an input. But let's just have a look at the run-up to November, December of 2015. And you indicated that the country was in a horrible state. And that obviously was early in the year, and that commendably, we haven't done an inquiry into the turnabout of Eskom at that stage when it came to the power and the blackouts. Would you say that situation continued towards the end of 2015, November, December of 2015?
At this stage, we're having a number of improvements in terms of the construction of new power stations. That alleviated the risk of poor electricity reserves. We were always hovering around probably 1,500, not the 4,000 to 5,000 that had been there before, which necessitated load shedding. So the situation was improving.
And when one then considers the meeting that took place in December, the round robin meeting related to the guarantee, 1.8 billion, why was that so urgent then, if it was a situation of a turnaround? Yes. I'm sorry, your mic.
Optimum Coal Mine had decided not to supply Hendrina, and Hendrina produces 2,000 megawatts of power, and it was clear that we are going to run into trouble. On top of that, they had gone into business rescue. So there were a number of factors that were creating a crisis. So when management came to us and said, there's going to be a crisis here, we had to act.
Was the situation not that Optimum had asked for an imposition of the hardship clause and that had been negotiated, and you might not be aware of that, prior to Mr. Molefe's arrival, which would have resolved that problem, but when he arrived, he refused to accept the increased price that Optimum then, before it was placed under business rescue, had offered and which had gone through certain committees. But when it got to Mr. Molefe, he refused to continue with that contract.
I'm not aware of the details. But what Mr. Molefe told me was that Mr. Glasenberg, the head of Optimum Holdings, had wanted export parity prices and wanted to change from 150 to something like over 300, and that's what he rejected. That's what, according to him, that's what he told.
I understand, but if you see the totality of the picture that we now sit in with, and again, you could say it's not been subjected to proper cross-examination, but you've got a company that provides to Hendrina, and they are under a hardship clause, and they are entitled to increase that price in negotiations. Those negotiations, according to the evidence, was accepted by Eskom. Was referred to the CEO, Mr. Molefe, then at the last for his sign-off. It was accepted by certain committees at Eskom itself, so it couldn't have been so outrageous. And then it was rejected by Mr. Molefe. Then we start to see the pressure that was put on Optimum to sell to Tegeta. Are you aware of the meeting of the 24th of November that took place with Mr. Mashilikoko the business rescue practitioners where certain conditions were imposed on Optimum for the sale, and where they were saying we were prepared to sell, but it had to be the whole of Optimum Holdings, including the terminal, including Kernfontein, and those type of conditions. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm actually surprised that you say Mr. Koko was part of that.
But his evidence was that he was involved. His evidence before us was that he sat in a meeting with the business rescue practitioners and saying, and it's on record, so maybe you haven't seen it and you're welcome to look at that as well. But you see, there was an involvement of Eskom in this whole process.
No, my notes. Eskom's involvement was in terms of securing its interest in coal.
Yes.
Not in the sales.
Yes. But you see, at that same time, I understand your version, at the same time a 2 billion rand penalty was imposed on Optima. Do you not agree that that adds pressure to them to sell?
Again, this is what I heard. From as early as 2012, Optima was washing its coal for export, the RP1 quality grade for export, and giving the middlings, that is what remains out of the washing, to Eskom.
I understand that, Dr. Forgive me for interrupting you, because I do understand that process and that background, but we know that that was reduced to a fine of 500 million after the Tegeta sale was concluded. So it was, I'm just illustrating additional pressure to sell. We also know that Minister Zwani was in Switzerland putting pressure on Optimum to sell. Are you aware of that at all?
Well, from the reports, yes. But again, I can't sit here before Parliament.
I understand. It's what you've heard. But you understand, and then we've got a meeting in December where there is a 1.8 billion rand guarantee. Have you ever, as a board chairman of state-owned enterprises, have you ever experienced a guarantee being given by a state-owned company to buy another company?
You know, Honorable Swart, that issue never came to the board about the guarantee. What came to the board was the amount of money that was required to secure coal.
I do understand, but it was in excess of the board's mandate as well, was it? It should have gone to the minister. Do you not agree?
No. Just put it this way. If the budget in the corporate plan is accepted by the minister, the IFC can authorize spending to the amount of the budget. That does not require fresh authorization.
I've got 3 minutes.
The purchase of coal,
yes,
is part of the corporate plan.
I understand, but the minister indicated that she had to give that approval for that specific guarantee, and it wasn't obtained. But can I just ask you, because it's very clear, and I put the same thing to the acting chairman of the board, Mr. Khoza, where he also said Eskom played no role in the purchase. And after a few questions, and after me putting to him, he conceded that Eskom played a significant role. And in fact, the finding of the public protector that Eskom board was acting to the benefit of Tegeta is in fact true. Do you still hold that it's not so?
In terms of what came to us about that round-robin resolution, it was expressly to pay for coal.
I understand. In hindsight,
the things I've read in the press and heard in some of the evidence convinces me that it's urgent that the commission sifts through all the documentation and find exactly what happened.
I understand, but the challenge is this public protector's report came out with serious allegations in November of 2016, and billions of rands have left the country. We can't wait for another commission of inquiry. Do you understand that, Mr. Gubani? We are in a serious situation. Eskom is in a serious situation.
I agree, but I'm saying we wanted to raise the review explicitly to cover those issues.
But weren't you concerned about the funds leaving the country? Let me just put it to you this way. The meeting in April, the 12th of April, when the 659 million prepayment was agreed to, was it not coincidental that it was the same day that Tegeta needed 600 million to buy Optima?
I can assure you that never came to the board's attention.
But the public protector says it should have. And people of your knowledge should have been aware of that. And so, can I just read to you, on the 22nd of November, Eskom board member, Mr. Mark Pomensky, at that time, Eskom board member. You know Mr. Mark Pomensky. He was a member of your board.
Yes, sure.
He's also a member of Oak Bay Resources, the Gupta company. Is that not so?
Yes.
He writes an email that is in the Gupta leaks. In terms of the investment committee, I'm available to start right away. He writes it to Atul Gupta. I'm at the tail end of the main acquisition of Optimum Coal. That is a board member that is saying they are involved with the acquisition of Optimum Coal. Yet you say Eskom was not involved. Now you obviously were not aware of that, I would presume.
It's just, it came out of the Gupta leaks. It never came out of him or anyone on the board.
Again, we'll establish the veracity of that, but it seems to fit into the narrative because, again, he writes another very startling email where he says at the conclusion of, on the 10th of December, when we had that discussion, you had that meeting on the 1.8 billion, he writes a email to Atul Gupta, which fits directly into the state capture allegations. Congratulations on a brilliant and well-thought planned strategy acquisition of Optimum Group of Companies. Well done, I'm proud of you. This is the beginning. I'm more than sure you and the team will make a huge success. Let me know when you're ready to discuss the operational implementation. He's speaking as an Eskom board member. Don't you think that's outrageous if it is proved to be true?
Well, it is.
And so, Dr. Gubani, your evidence today, you've given evidence of your links with the Guptas. We know Mr. Molefe was linked with the Guptas. We had Exxaro here. The main reason was at the end of 2015, there was a crisis at Arnott, was the cancellation of the Exxaro contract. Are you aware that Mr. Molefe refused to meet with one of the most black-empowered companies, and that is Exxaro? We've got that evidence. But he was continuously in contact with Gupta-related companies. Don't you think if that came to your attention as a board chairman, that would be outrageous?
Certainly. But what I know is that the Exxaro contract expired in 2015.
Yes, sorry. But they requested to extend it. They wrote letters to the minister. The minister refused to speak to them even. The minister, and that resulted in the closure of the Arnott colliery. 1,500 people were kicked out of their jobs. But the minister intervened to ensure that the Gupta-related companies got this deal. Don't you think that is outrageous?
Well, if that's the case, it's outrageous. However, the Exxaro was getting 51 rand per gigajoule. And all the other people were getting around 18, 19.
Dr. Gubani, my time has expired, but the Mafube contract was supplying coal to Arnott at 132 rand per ton. Yes, it might not have been the best quality, but it was 1 million tons per year on a conveyor belt. And that was then stopped. No reason was given. That contract was stopped. We've got the evidence before us. And then what happened was the Optimum mine coal that was supposed to go to Hendrina was sent to Arnott at 450 rand a ton, as opposed to the 150 that Hendrina was getting. But Hendrina's output was then reduced. So that is how it happened. And if you look into that, Dr. Gubani, I'm sure you would share our concerns as that information is made bare.
I certainly do.
Thank you, Chair. I'm afraid my time has run out. Thank you, Dr. Gubani.
Thank you, Honorable Swart. Honorable Mare.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. G'day, I'm Eric Mare. I first want to ask, just get clarity about being you the board chairperson, and you work closely with the CEO as well as with the minister, at that point in time, Minister Lynn Brown. How close or how will you describe your relationship with the minister?
It was a good relationship. She was under a lot of pressure. I was under a lot of pressure. We tried to steer the ship as close as possible. I consulted her as much as I could. It was a good working relationship.
Okay. Would you also then say that you've got an open way of communication to each other?
I would say so. Okay. There was nothing that stopped me from phoning her or her phoning me or having a meeting.
I will come back to that now, just now. How would you describe the governance when you've taken over as the chairperson of the board, the governance overall by the executive of Eskom as such?
Well, I would say it was good because, you know, right from the time we were inducted, Exco gave us good information. The trouble, of course, happened to be that that information was not believed by the war room, and of course the minister was under pressure because they wanted to be sure that what Eskom was giving was correct. But as far as I'm concerned, particularly under Brian Malife, the whole mood changed and there was real synergy in terms of how Eskom bought and how Exco went. So it was good.
Now, as it happened that Brian was transferred, to put it that way, from Transnet to Eskom, it seems that's where the trouble starts as far as the clarity is concerned with his appointment, to put it that way. If it was to be permanent or to be on a 5-year fixed contract. As it happened that Mr. Minnar, that was on the executive level himself, fill in a form that went to the pension fund where he indicated on a code that he filled in that Mr. Brian Molefe was a permanent employee. That seems afterwards not be the case. It should be on a fixed term contract. I just want to go to one page, if you don't mind. Page 20, 257. Can I just, don't mind if I read here. On 9th of February 2016, the PNG committee met to deliberate on the conclusion of a contract of employment with Mr. Molefe, including the issue relating to his pension benefits. In order to better understand the distinction between appointing Molefe on a fixed term as opposed to a permanent contract basis and the options available to the board for addressing Mr. Molefe's concerns, Mr. Minnar guided the board. So obvious, Mr. Minnar advised the board. As already mentioned, Mr. Minnar explained to the board that due to Mr. Molefe's short-term contracts, now this is quite interesting for me, explained to the board that due to Mr. Molefe's short-term contracts with numerous public entities in which he served at the executive level, he was deprived of the opportunity to grow a pension fund in a single fund. So this situation seems could have been happened previously with other public entities as well, except with Transnet, because there was a transfer of pension funds of 4.2 something to this one. I just want to make the point in the sense of when there's a salary of 7.65, what the case is, million on an annual basis, then you actually make up with that type of salary when there's no pension fund involved. How do you see it?
Well, as I said, the Eskom group chief executives were benchmarked on the market surveys. And this is what Mr. Minar was quoting, and this was to him the fair level of payment. And that it had happened with other group chief executives. So who are we to say we are now going to deprive this group executive of the benefits that have been current at Eskom?
Now, I want to come back to the word clarity, because you stated that you've got an open communication line to the minister. It seems there wasn't clarity on the case of 5-year fixed contract or permanent basis. That you as chairperson, I put it to you and asked you in all honesty, did you bother to pick up the phone and phone the minister and say, I need clarity on this now. Is it permanent or fixed, 5 fixed-year contract basis? Because you said you have an open communication line to the minister.
We wrote a letter which is contained in this. The people around the minister said she had been given the letter. Later on it turned out she had not been. We were not really asking for his permission. We're informing her that we have made these arrangements to suit the concerns that were expressed by Mr. Modife and not based on the advice that we had received. So it wasn't a matter of saying, remember that the MOI at Eskom at that time gave the board a lot of discretion in terms of appointments. So we were asking for a support, etc., but not necessarily that we're asking her to approve it.
I just want to make a point that the CEO is that the number one employee in any company, and Minister Lynn Brown actually represented the main shareholder, that is the state. So there should have been a follow-up, I suppose, then either by you or somebody on the executive to get clarity about this appointment, on which status it should be done.
I agree. We should have done that. However, we relied very much on the expertise of Mr. Minar.
Yes, that I picked up, and it seems at the end of the day, you can't just accept by norm. You always have at that level, because it got serious implications when it comes to pension benefits, I would say. Can I just go also to page 21, 2510, where it is now clarity about he signed the second contract, that is on the 7th of March 2016, he signed the second contract of employment for a fixed term of 5 years with effect from the 1st of October 2015. And determined on September 2020. So on the 19th of April 2016, the board approved the resolution of the PNG committee meeting at 9th of February 2016. So there was now agreement, and it was approved, and everybody is now happy, since both parties, to put it that way. But now on the 6th of September, if I come into an agreement with you that I'll give my services to your company and that's my package, then we've got an agreement and I've signed the agreement. Now on the 6th of September 2016, it was decided to increase the long-term incentive award for Mr. Molefe to 2 times the annual pensionable earnings on the basis that the amount was relatively low based on the benchmark against similar long-term incentive award to the chief executive at that level. And my question is only, if I've signed the agreement on the 7th of March and I agreed that I will do this, who initiated this, that this must now be two times the annual pension bill, because I've agreed that I will work for this salary and all the benefits for the next 5 years. So who initiated that this now must be done to actually to increase annual pension bill earnings, the incentive award?
Well, it was not just specific to him. Across the board, short-term and long-term incentives were being reviewed. I can only say this came as part of that.
But part of governance would be, if I signed a contract and I've agreed and I was a contract worker, then I agreed this will be my payment on a monthly basis for the period of 3 or 5 years. So that's fixed. So for governance purposes, why was this now then reviewed, to put it that way? Because this is done, dusted.
Because his salary package was never reviewed in terms of the fixed term contract. His salary package remained one for a permanent employee, and that's what went to the pension fund to which he was contributing. So the incentive is a totally different entity. This is to apply to all the top management. So if I join a company today and tomorrow they decide on a salary increase, surely I have to be considered as well.
Yeah, because this was initiated after he signed the second contract of employment that was a fixed one, just to put it on record, as in point 2510, that was agreed.
You're quite right.
Yeah.
That's the mistake we made. We should have insisted that go and recalculate the whole package on a fixed term contract basis. That never happened.
Okay, thank you for that. Can I just ask, as a matter of interest, you resigned as the chairman of the board on the 12th of June 2017. Was there any specific reason that you didn't do your old term?
No, it was just personal.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to follow up on that one. How would you see at this point in time, when you left, is the governance overall in Eskom? Because you said what it was when you arrived and when you left, how did you see that?
Problem started when Molefe left. I think that's when the dissonance started to appear, that people were going back into their silos, the coordination that had been taking place had sort of disappeared. The CFO, I think, was also suspended. There were new people coming in. You know, it was instability that happened because of the changes.
Wouldn't you maybe say that the problem started when Mr. Brian Dams left, actually, Eskom? That's where it all started.
Well, Brian, I take him as a friend of mine. He did an excellent job at Eskom, but he also made some mistakes. When he took away procurement from the power stations and centralized it at Megawatt Park, I think that's when the trouble started. Because the station manager would want an outage to maintain the turbines, the boilers, but all that had to come first to Megawatt Park. That disempowered the station managers. And I would say the problem of load shedding worsened from that change of the model. But obviously it meant well. The keeping the lights on strategy that he advocated, especially for 2010, so that there's no disruption, also contributed to the lower level of maintenance of our coal fleet. He was a brilliant man, no doubt, but there were some mistakes.
With the appointment of the current acting CEO and the new board, what is your view, being an experienced person, as you stipulated before, and your own view, would they pull it through for South Africa?
Well, I have a lot of confidence in Phakamani. I worked with him at Land Bank. It was in huge debt. We initiated some arrests. We brought confidence back to the farmers to take up our bonds and our loans. He's a good operator, Phakamani. And then he created what was called fit for purpose, fit for the future of the land bank. I think he's doing very well. I have no doubt that he will do very well at Eskom. However, the caveat is you cannot have financial sustainability when your tariff path is continually going down. You can't, because that's your source of revenue. That's the source of pricing of electricity. And on the other hand, because the cost plus mines are not producing as efficiently and as cheaply as they used to before, because they're chasing export markets with much higher revenues. So we have got tariff going down, cost of primary energy going up. It's a disaster.
My last question would be, can I have your view? Last question.
Your time is up.
30 seconds. What is your view on the previous CFO, Mr. Singh?
Mr. Singh was very good with figures. However, what has come out regarding trillion payment and all those things is worrying. However, I don't think he can be judged as guilty or not guilty until the facts are really on the table. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mara. Honorable Luyange.
Thank you, Chairperson. Dr. Ngubane, good afternoon. I have trust in you, and I had trust in you even by the time I came across you that you are coming to Eskom. But if I may ask, did you have any connections or did you ever greet Umati Udat Mandela? Yeah, we are Maz Mandela, Udat Mandela, the struggle icon like yourself. Definitely. What do you think Matiba can say if today we are sitting here talking about issues that are very clear, that people are hell-bent to loot state resources and therefore kill the whole gains of 1994? I am asking that, Dr. Ngubane, because you are a doctor, and a doctor has a responsibility to correct things that went actually wrong. A professor will create and initiate understandings and principles. I don't expect a doctor would say, I only came across this patient today. I cannot say anything about his or her past illnesses. That is irresponsibility. Intellectually, even the poet who Rudyard Kipling, when he says, and I quote, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blame it on you, he continues to say, you will be a man, my son, unquote. Why do we then now, intellectuals of our own in the country called South Africa, after 24 years of democracy, our own intellect cannot accept and take responsibility? I said, I add, because an error is actually created in a human being. There is what is called a human error. No one is perfect, but it is ethically and morally correct for a human being to accept a mistake. The expertise and the experience that we had, even in young intellectuals like your Kokos and your Brian Molifes, but because of greed, because that people want billions, they are used to millions, then we are in this quagmire. You came into Eskom, Dr. Ngubane. Since you came there, I want to I want to go through a little bit of sequential order of events that requires an intellectual that will be responsible and be responsible enough. It is said you had a meeting with Brian Molefe where you actually motivated to the then minister Uramatlodi to suspend all Glencore mining licenses. I go further to identify that on the 13th of April, in a meeting of Eskom board late in the night, that was solely said to approve the prepayment of 659 million to Tegeta in order for Tegeta to finalize the optimum purchase. The following day, on the 14th, Tegeta pays Glencore 2.1 billion, I'm saying on the 15th. Then Optimum, Grootfontein and Richards Bay allocation transferred to Tegeta. Optimum was given a further contract for Arnott. With this additional contract, Eskom pays Tegeta 500 million between the 29th of January and that 13th of April. I wonder where the masses of South Africa when people are doing this overnight. Learned people, people who are not hungry, people who have four or five fridges in their houses, they are sitting overnight running around using the state resources in this fashion. Eskom, in February, Ibrakfontein sold to another Gupta company, Shiva Coal, which Shiva is not 51% black-owned, which is a government policy. So it means this Gupta-related company did not qualify to be a service provider because it is not in terms of the points that are required for a transformation. It does not reach the 51%. In November, let me jump and go to November, Eskom board discusses mothballing Komati, meaning that Eskom might have to settle the 7 billion Grootfontein contract. What is this thing about Eskom playing around man now? There's nothing that talks about electrification. Here it's about billions going to individuals, and individuals that are mesmerized by these Guptas. It's only three people, Dr. Ngubane, with due respect. Can you please breathe on this? Where is the ethical conduct? How do you justify actions of this nature? Can you please tell South Africans? As an intellectual, as a senior citizen, and a cycle icon like yourself, can you tell us what is it that we must take from you? We are sitting here, we want to go and report to Parliament. Reporting what to Parliament when you know what happened at Eskom? It is not fair, it is unethical, it is immoral. Can you talk that over?
Well, it's difficult, Doctor, to respond to such condemnatory language and statements. Let us wait for the commission. I keep saying that because all documents will be on the table. We will know who did exactly what. If I get a motivation from management and it's well structured, it's followed all the policy and the processes of procurement, how do I then go and say you are wrong unless I've got the information and the proof of that? How do I do that? BTC sits, takes a decision, and then I must go and say they are wrong. I mean, first of all, as far as I know, the negotiations for the sale of Optimum involved other companies. It was a commercial issue. The creditors of Optimum, I'm told, agreed to the sale, and the banks were involved in that. The Competition Commission agreed to the sale. So where does Eskom come in that? I mean, if we buy coal for a certain amount, and the person from whom we purchase uses that money for other things, how can we be blamed to say we gave him the coal to do X, Y, Z?
Dr. Ngubane, I mean, it is so pathetic. It is so pathetic that you still hell-bent to stand on one leg and see what is being done. The questions that you are asking, it's time-wasting. Because if you say so, there is this, what actually prompted the Parliament to say there is a need for the Commission of Inquiry? What actually made Thuli Madonsela to recommend that there be such an investigation when there is nothing wrong? I mean, can we put South Africans into the right context, Nkulu?
Advocate Madonsela mentioned a lot of observations depending on the information she had. She said these things must be investigated further and there must be appointed a judicial commission. I cannot sit here and condemn people without evidence. I know there's public opinion. I know that. But that public opinion depends on what comes out in the social media, in the formal media. I agree. Things sound terrible. But I can't sit here and say XYZ put out a fake tender, gave procurement in a fake way, unless I have got the evidence.
Now, what do you say about the trillion? Because I heard you singing ululation songs for Arnold Singh. What is good about Arnold Singh? It has to be shrewd and have ability to talk nicely when it's a deep scalem in looting state resources. Is that fair? I mean, is that fair? You may not say that to us. You may not say that to the chairperson. You may not say that to anyone in front of you. But the poor sees and they hear what you are saying.
I've worked many years with the poor, my friend. I used to treat people who had no money. So don't tell me about the poor. I'm from there. Now, hang on.
Listen, you must answer me.
Members, and Dr. Ngubane, do not forget that I am chairing the meeting. So you should be giving each other time to listen to each other. So don't get into each other's mouth, because there are people outside there who are sending SMSs and saying they are watching the proceedings and they want to hear what Dr. Ngubane is saying, and they want to hear your questions. So please give each other time. Don't get into each other. Don't panic. We have time. We have asked extra time from the House Chairperson. Please give each other time and be patient to each other. Thank you very much. And respect each other.
I'm saying.
What are you saying? What I'm saying, Dr. Ngubane, I am the one who must ask questions. I'm not going to respond to you. I was never a chairperson of ESCOM.
But I'm telling
you. You are the one who's chairperson of ESCOM. I want you to respond.
But I'm responding.
No, you are not responding now.
You want me to say that Anuj Singh was a crook, was that? It's for the courts to prove that. I mean, how do I become judgmental about people when there are actually processes that will examine what was paid to McKinsey, that will examine what was paid to Trillion? I mean, I don't have evidence to say X, Y, Z, unless I've got,
Now the asset forfeiture unit is not right to do their work and make sure that they put together all those who are claiming. You know, the self-aggrandizement is not going to help anyone to be claiming to be a champion of the poor when people are hungry out there and the resources have been looted at ESCOM.
I'm not sitting here to take this type of rubbish.
No, Dr. Ngubane, you can't use that language in a committee meeting. No, Dr. Ngubane, I've just now asked you to be patient and listen to that rubbish that is said by Honorable Luyenge and respond to it, because he is also responding to what you are saying. So I'm not taking sides here. Let us not call members. Let don't say Luyenge is talking rubbish. You are not going to sit here and listen to the rubbish that he's saying, because here we are a committee of parliament. It is not for the first time that you say that. In fact, in the media, you said we, as this committee, we are asking you questions that are nonsensical questions. So you are repeating your statement that you have done, that you have said last time in June 2017. We cannot accept that, Dr. Ngubane. We cannot accept you insulting us as members of parliament. You are not insulted by Honorable Luyenge. Honorable Luyenge is asking you on issues that happened or activities that happened in Eskom. And those, some of those activities that happened in Eskom, Mr. Singh was here. And Mr. Singh, apparently, according to the information that we have received, Mr. Singh has lied to us. Therefore, you cannot come here and say we are talking rubbish. That is not acceptable. We will never accept it as this committee. Because we are a committee of parliament, we need to get to the bottom of the truth of what is happening at Eskom. Whoever has done wrong must be interrogated by the court of law, or whoever has the power to do that. But you can't come here and insult us.
Chairperson, before
that man responds, we're not going to sit here Honorable Dlamini,
you cannot. I cannot say to Mr. Ngubane, your language is wrong, and accept yours when yours is wrong.
I have dealt with that.
I've dealt with that. Please, let us respect each other. I know that this is not acceptable. I have already said that. If I give you a chance to speak, do not insult back. Do not insult back. You are a member of parliament. You are representing a constituency. Therefore, I cannot allow you to disrespect a person that you have invited. Can you speak, Honorable Dlamini? I noted you, Honorable. We are itching on Honorable Luyenge's time.
I'm going to be straightforward. That man must not come and insult us here. That one will never accept. So that story of saying, when the Honorable Member is asking a question on the way that was doing at Eskom, he's talking rubbish, he must withdraw it now. We are not his friend, or we are not his kid. He must never do that.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Tsedi.
Yeah, I agree with Honorable Dlamini. We cannot proceed with this process until he has apologized to this committee. If he's not ready to proceed with the work that we are doing, let him say so. There's nothing wrong in you living here now. We'll release you and we'll conclude on the basis what we've presented so far. There's nothing wrong. You owe us an apology, do it now, or else you will release you now.
Well,
there is the
chairperson. I withdraw that. However,
thank you very much. You can't have conditions.
I've withdrawn that. However, parliamentarians have got an equal responsibility to respect the citizens of this country. I came here to an inquiry that is factual, that is seeking information. To insinuate that I'm a crook, I'm all sorts of things, is unfair. It's just totally unfair.
Have you said that Honorable Mr. Dr. Ngubane is a crook?
How can I say that, man? How can I say that? I'm not new in this parliament. I may not have your billions that you think I'm a rubbish because
Hi, Dr. Luyenge. I know you are angry, but I've dealt with that.
I don't need these billions, man. I'm fine with my 200.
and it is enough for me and my integrity.
Can you continue?
The asset forfeiture unit, Shepherdson, has obtained a preservation order against Trillian and Mackenzie. Mackenzie was here, and it is Mackenzie who said, we are paying back the money that is actually money that got into our coffers illegally. Was that wrong on the part of Mackenzie to say that, Dr. Ngubane?
First of all, Chairperson, I do not have billions. You are making South Africans believe that by saying it in Parliament. I do not. You can check my bank accounts. You can go anywhere. However, the asset forfeiture unit used law. It used law, and they were sanctioned by law. So that is absolutely fine. You know, this is part of the legal system of this country. But to sit and say, I'm colluding with X, Y, Z, insinuations, that is just denigrating me. And I mean, really, I can't accept that. I was a member of parliament for many years. We never did such things. I mean, if it's a question of inquiry, let it be factual, let it be proper factual.
No, President, I am not going to allow a situation whereby you are lectured by Dr. Ngubane here. That is wrong. I cannot accept that. I'm a member of parliament. I'm elected by the poor masses. But I think let me not continue with this one.
Thank you, Honorable Luyenge, and thank you, Honorable Members. I just want to put it on record, Dr. Ngubane, that we have all the documents on us. I am not sure if when you are saying you are waiting for the Commission of Inquiry, because you have all the documents, or are you going to give the Commission of Inquiry is going to get different documents than the documents that we have, because we are guided, we read documents from ESCOM, we are guided by the evidence we got from people that were invited in this inquiry, and those people were carrying documents with them. We're carrying documents from ESCOM. ESCOM sent us documents of meetings and all the activities that were happening in ESCOM. We've got documents. If you are saying we are waiting for the Commission of Inquiry in answering some of the questions that have been put to you, are you saying to us the documents that are with us are wrong documents? There will be some other set of documents that are different to this one that we have here as a committee?
Chairperson, I'm not sure. I wasn't aware that you have all the documents at ESCOM.
Dr. Ngubane, in some research documents, we have found out that there's Gate Oil and Gas company that you were a director of, and you were chopped, or what is this, chattered around going to meetings, maybe in developing or on establishing the company. My question would be, when you were chattered around as the chairperson of the committee for your own companies or your own businesses, were you chattered around by the money from ESCOM, or was it out of your own pocket?
Well, chairperson, Gate Holdings ended somewhere around somewhere 2014, I cannot be sure of the precise date, it ceased to function. I never left the country on Gate Holdings business. It just didn't trade. It failed to go and get the oil sources from West Africa. It did not work.
Can you explain to us why did Eskom and the Department of Mineral Resources suddenly change their attitude to coal supply risk when Tegeta entered in the picture in late 2015?
Well, I'm not aware that Mineral Resources changed its policy. We always had a coal policy which rested on cost plus mines that Eskom funded. We had short and medium-term coal supply contracts, so I'm not aware that there was a change.
So all the prepayment and the prepayment that was done by Eskom, it's something that Eskom has done before with other companies?
Exactly. The major companies that supply coal, Eskom invests in drilling, in opening coal seams, and in supplying capital equipment, and still pays for the coal.
In your response to Honorable Dlamini, you said you only read in the report of an internal audit. You have not read the report of the BTC. I thought, with my little knowledge of how you work in Eskom, in the BTC, the board, especially the chairperson of the board, is part of the BTC. So the report of the board that is developed by the BTC, the chairperson of the board is also, or if he is not part of the BTC, he is a person that report has to go through. And you say you don't know any report that comes from the BTC, especially specifically to what Honorable Dlamini has asked.
No, Chairperson. I think that's a miscommunication. All the Eskom boards have a mandate or delegation of authority to take decisions, final decisions on business as comes to them. Then quarterly, they send a report to the board, which report is then included in the report to the shareholder. No chairperson or CEO can be part of PTC. That is by rule.
Okay. Another contradicting information to the information that we got last week. What would be your response in allegations that your family, your wife, had a project that was working either at Kusile or Medupi, and those are the power stations that I think are under Eskom, and you were a chairperson of the board of Eskom?
My wife became a shareholder in Southie, which is an engineering company, about 1998. She later resigned as a director. Her participation in that company remains being a shareholder, not a director. So she has never been part of any decision or any application by Saudi to do Eskom business.
You are saying to us you are not party to the work of the executive, especially when it comes to tendering, let me say so, when giving work to certain companies like the Trillion matter, the implementation of the Trillion, the the Trillion Company and McKinsey contracts. But do you get reports from the executive in their implementation of work or dealings with the companies that are on contract with Eskom? When you get that report, do you interact with the report as a board, or do you interact with the report with the legal team of Eskom? I take it Eskom has got a legal team that is working, that is permanently at Eskom.
What happens is, depending on the level of delegation of authority, certain things end up with management. But when it comes to 500 million, it escalates to ESCOPS, that is the ESCOM procurement subcommittee. When it exceeds 750, it comes to the board tender committee. That is the nature of delegation of authority. Quarterly, all the committees have to send a report to the board, which is then included in the shareholder report. At these reporting sessions, it's matters for noting, except where there's an issue that arises. And in my case, Ms. Daniels was a constant advisor in terms of what was coming to the board. Unless she picked out a problem, I was satisfied. There was no need to probe further because she cleared all these matters.
Mr. Molefe brought joy in Eskom. That's your direct words. There was a CEO before Mr. Molefe that was working on the load shedding. Can you put it on record in saying the CEO that was before Brian Molefe at Eskom was unable to manage the load shedding in the country? The CEO before Mr. Molefe was the one that would take that would have taken the country to a total total blackout if Mr. Molefe did not come. Because you are saying he has brought joy in the company.
I had very little exposure to Madonna. Remember when we came and there was this suspension of executives, Mr. Madonna opted not to come back, but to take a settlement and go. So my interaction with him was very limited. Probably not even more than 3 months before he left. But the problems, of course, were there. And the person I worked with was Molefe, and we saw the difference. So I cannot comment on the abilities of Mr. McDonald. All I know is that there were problems. We worked with Molefe, and we tried to solve the problems.
I have never worked at Eskom, but I am putting to you now that Mr. Brian Molefe has taken a reward that was not for him because the work has already started in fighting the load shedding. I am not going to talk about the attitudes of people who were not going to the boilers, who had their cliques within Eskom, but he took the reward of other people. And Mr. Matuna was not given a chance to prove to the country that he is able to deal with the load shedding, because there was an unfinished business that has to be finished during that time. That is therefore, I'm not expecting you to respond to what I'm saying. I'm just raising I'm saying this because I could see that within Eskom, for as long as we have been in this inquiry, within Eskom, the executive of Eskom, the board members of Eskom, they were putting pressure on people who are working because they did not want Mr. Madona to get the crown. Therefore, the crown had to be given to Brian Molefe because Brian Molefe was seen as the best candidate that can work for Eskom and not Mr. Madona. That is my own observation. That's what I would want to say to you. Because I'm saying this because there is somewhere here in this report that says in one of the presentations here that I want to be specific, you know. Mr. Molefe was given a chance and the board was so worried that if Mr. Molefe is losing his position as CEO, no matter what happened, Eskom must come up with a benefit that would say thank you to Mr. Molefe. Even if he worked for 18 months, there must be something that is given to Mr. Molefe. It is in your presentation. It says, upon considering the impact of losing Mr. Molefe in the event that a resolution could not be reached on terms of his appointment, Ms. Klein and I sought whatever to Mr. Minar. You sought advice from Mr. Minar. And then you say, based on the above mentioned advice, it was then agreed that an arrangement could be put in place to ensure that Mr. Molefe was not adversely affected in respect of his pension benefit. That is why I am saying there was a conspiracy to take Mr. Madona out and get Mr. Molefe, and so that Mr. Molefe can earn more. That is why, as this committee, we saw it that Mr. Molefe was seen as the best candidate or as the best person to get 30 million. Whether how it is calculated, whether how did you reach the 30 million, but Mr. Molefe, for him, because he was the best man, he was a good person that brought back the reputation in Eskom, he needs to be paid back. There should be a payback because Mr. Molefe seemed to be the only person who could stabilize Eskom by then and nobody else. With my own assessment, I am saying to you, Dr. Mubani, the board during that time has made it a point that we have seconded Mr. Molefe from Transnet to Eskom. Therefore, if he loses this position that we have given him here in Eskom, we must reward him for what he has done through Eskom. That is my own assumption. What are you saying on that assumption that I have?
Well, I accept your assumption. You have a right to it. But the facts, as I gave them, record the processes that went on in Eskom. I accept that Mr. Madona could have done the change in terms of turnaround. But unfortunately, he left. He was not pushed out by us. He decided to take a settlement and go.
I am not sure of your last input that says he was not pushed out. Mr. Madona was not pushed out. I do not agree with you. I am telling you that Mr. Madona was pushed out because there's a Brian Molefe that has to be considered. That's what I'm saying to you. And I don't really expect you to respond to that, Dr. Ngubane, because the argument about Mr. Molefe being the best man in Eskom, we can take it further, but I am telling you, Mr. Molefe alone would have not brought back the country where it was moving to. And secondly, Mr. Matuna, as a CEO of Eskom, was pushed out of Eskom so that the great man can be part of Eskom. That's what I am saying to you now in this afternoon. And that is going to be proven. It is going to be proven. Mr. Matuna was here. He gave his own story. There are a lot of people who came to the inquiry who can agree with me. In fact, who agrees with me that Mr. Matuna was pushed out of Eskom. Thank you, Mr. Ngubane, for coming. And thank you for honoring the invitation that we sent to you as the Committee of Public Enterprises. You know, at the beginning of this inquiry, when the committee took a decision of having this inquiry, it was because of your input on the 23rd of May 2017 at Townhouse Hotel that made us to push that we have this inquiry, because we need to get to the depth of the rot that is happening at Eskom. We heard your testimony, Dr. Ngubane, the former chairperson of Eskom, and you were given or were afforded an opportunity to state your version of events in response of the evidence that we have and witnesses that previously appeared in this committee. Dr. Ngubane, you then gave us your events at Eskom, including the employment of Brian Molefe and the re-employment. He was employed at the first time and re-employed again. And Mr. Molefe left Eskom because of the public protector's report that was implicating him in certain wrongdoings in Eskom. And he could not stand the heat at Eskom then, and then he left. On behalf of the committee, I want to thank you for attending the meeting. The information you provided today will be considered by the committee during its deliberation. The committee is committed to further interrogate the information that you have presented to us together with all the evidence that have been presented before us. I thank you again, Mr. Ngubane, for your time of coming to the committee. Thank you very much. Members, there is a finger lunch over there. If anyone, before you go to the house, please, from here you go straight to the house. You don't go land. Sorry?
I was saying, Chairperson, we can go to the bathrooms as well. There is a permission from the house chair. I'm from talking to him.
Oh, that no, it's fine. But for
the permission.
For as long as they will be going back to the house.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.